My name is Tim Wood. I was a newspaper reporter working at the Old Bailey for over 20 years. I ran an agency there with about 7 reporters. I then went to work for a couple of national newspapers, the News of the World being one, and I worked for them right up to the time they were closed down. I now work as a tour guide. I set up my own business as a crime reporter. I had quite a lot of contacts in the court, and I now take people to the Old Bailey and the Royal Courts of Justice in what I describe as a combined tour. They also go to Lincoln's Inn, which is where the barristers have their offices, or what they call their chambers. And the tours I do last about 2 hours. And before COVID, I was getting, you know, I was getting people in court, and I provide them with a list of the most interesting cases on that day, which I managed to get through my contacts at the Old Bailey. So,
tell us about your time as a reporter. Can you tell us about a couple of memorable cases that you covered?
I suppose the first memorable case I covered was actually the Yorkshire Ripper. Although, to be honest, because I was so young, I was making the tea for the more experienced reporters. But I covered nearly all the big trials, you know, the terrorist trials, and then latterly Baby P. Who was the person who killed the two little girls, Holly and Jessica? I covered that one. Well, I covered, you know, nearly every big trial at the Old Bailey for 20-odd years, because obviously that was my job, to be in the best and most interesting cases. The trial that sticks out in my mind happened shortly after I arrived at the Old Bailey, because after a time, like anything, as you hear these sort of horror stories that happen in real life, you become slightly immune. It ends up being a bit like the news. But when I first joined the Old Bailey, there was one case that almost gave me nightmares. And it involved a little girl who was a two-year-old little girl, and her name was Heidi Casida. And her mother met a man in the local pub who was a very controlling individual. He came into their household, which had she had two brothers, and he completely dominated the mother and everyone else in there. And for some reason, he took a dislike to this little girl, and he ended up locking her in this empty room in the house, which was just floorboards. And incredibly, the family just carried on living as normal while this little girl starved to death in this cold room, you know, just with floorboards. And when the social workers eventually got round there, this was 6 months later, they found this mummified little tot in the corner, sort of curled up. And what shocked me was when the pathologist gave his evidence, he described the contents of her stomach, and the poor little girl had ended up eating her own nappy in a desperate attempt to stay alive. And I just found that really shocking. And one thing that made it even worse was when the man went into the witness box, he started crying and trying to make the jury feel sorry for him. But fortunately, they were having none of it, and he ended up being jailed for life. Hopefully, he's still inside now. That was over 20 years ago. But that case really, really sort of, you know, touched my heart. And I don't think any other case has. And I've done, you know, some terrible, terrible, you know, murders and killings and terror attacks and all the rest of it.
I mean, obviously, so there's a lot of heartless people and cruel people out there. How effective do you think, over the years, just in your experience, from your perspective, do you think the Old Bailey was in actually getting justice for people?
I think, you know, I think generally speaking, when someone is put on trial at the Old Bailey, more often than not, they're guilty of something. It might not be murder, it might be a lesser charge of manslaughter. But generally speaking, most people, I believe, who end up at the Old Bailey are guilty of something. I'm not saying in every case. But, I mean, the main travesties, I thought, happened in sex cases, rape cases. Often, you know, I was shocked a couple of times when some people ended up being convicted of rape when there was no evidence, you know, and it was just, you know, his word against hers. And, you know, some of those cases, I thought justice wasn't being being done. But generally speaking, I think because the lawyers go and the judge goes out of their way to sort of tell the jury, you have got to be 100% sure before you convict anybody of any crime. You know, more people who've committed crimes get off than there's sort of travesties of justice. Obviously, you know, there are mistakes made as we...
Did you ever get the feeling that either the rich and powerful or people well connected with the establishment could pull strings and maybe get off where, you know, an ordinary person might not have those little extra little levers that they can pull underneath the judge?
Well, I mean, you know, the one of the failings of our justice system is that, you know, the whole point of barristers charging lots of money, the best ones, means that if you're very rich, it's a bit like, you know, a football team. If you can buy all the best players, you're going to win the Premiership. So if you end up being charged with a crime or you're suing someone or and you get a fantastic legal team, obviously, you know, the big corporations, you're more likely than not that you're going to win your case because these people, you know the law inside out, and there's all sorts of ways they can get evidence dismissed. And, you know, I've seen, you know, where the sort of the little man ends up trying to take, say, a big business who he thinks has done him down. And I've seen, you know, terrible tragedies where they've lost their house because, you know, their evidence has been ruled out because, you know, they haven't got the legal representation to sort of fight the sort of, you know, the wealthy lawyers who are hired by some of the big corporations. And that is, you know, my advice to anyone is that, you know, especially in civil law, don't get involved with it unless you are extremely rich, because you can end up losing everything.
Tell us a bit about the history of the place, because obviously you're taking people on a, you know, if you can, we can imagine almost a virtual tour of the Old Bailey. You know, how did it all start?
Well, the Old Bailey, it stands on the site of the old West Gate of the walled Roman city of London. And it began being used as a prison around about 1068 when the king known as William the Conqueror was on the throne. He used it as a sort of prison for the next 500 years until a very famous Lord Mayor of London, Dick Whittington, he had it knocked down and built what was to become the most infamous prison in British criminal history. And this was known as Newgate Prison. Newgate Prison was run very much like a business in that if you were wealthy, you could have your furniture brought in, your wife could come and see when you wanted. As long as you had enough money to bribe the guards, you could have almost anything you wanted. And, you know, an example is one man, he was held there for 40 years and he ended up bringing up 6 children behind bars. The Old Bailey, as we know it today, was opened around about 1907. It started off with what's known as the old building, and there were about 5 courts there. Today, there are 18 courts, but due to COVID, they've been cut down. They're only using about 6. And before COVID, there were sort of, I think, about 2,000 cases being heard there every year. And the Old Bailey is one of several Crown courts that deals only with criminal trials. And there's about 60 or 70 Crown courts in the country. And one of the reasons the Old Bailey gets all the big and best cases is, one, because it's situated very close to the Inns of Court. This is where all the judges and top barristers have their offices. And so what often happens, say, like in a case I mentioned earlier, the Yorkshire Ripper, the defence barrister will make an application to the judge and say, look, this man's terrorised the area, killing, you know, all these women, and he couldn't possibly have a fair trial in Yorkshire, so let's bring the case down to London where the jury won't be so tainted and they won't be sort of prejudiced towards my defendant, and he's much more likely to get a fair trial. So that's why the Old Bailey is often used to hear these huge cases from all around the country. And that's why it's got its reputation as, you know, the top criminal court, and probably maybe the most famous court in the world.
So if you take us on your virtual tour, what will we see? Obviously, most of the courts you say at the moment are closed, but what are some of the highlights of the building?
Well, the building, you're not really allowed to see a lot of the building because it's high security. So the public only have access to the public galleries where you can go and watch a trial. But inside the building, the courts are set on three floors. On the sort of ground floor, you've got courts 13, 14, 15, 16 and 17. And there are some exhibits there sort of from many years ago from the old Newgate prison where, you know, you sort of got shackles and whips and that sort of thing. On the first floor, where you've got the most, well, what used to be the most important courts 1, 2, 3, 4, up to court 8, there's a very sort of famous painted ceiling, and that was damaged during the war. And then on the top floor, you've got courts 9, 10, 11, 12. Above that, you've got where the barristers get changed, and there's a canteen. And the press room where I used to work always used to be on the lower ground floor. And when I first started at the Old Bailey, there were, you know, about 15 full-time reporters there every day, maybe up to 20. Today, because of the rise of the internet and, a lot of media organisations don't know how to sort of monetize the internet, and the number of full-time reporters who actually cover the Old Bailey as their job has dropped dramatically. I think there's only about, you know, 4 or 5 reporters covering it on a day-to-day basis now, when, you know, you get huge packs of reporters up there on a daily basis. Obviously, if there's a big case, you do get a pack of reporters appearing. But this is something that's happened in all Crown Courts, and all courts around the country. And, you know, a lot of the barristers I talk to, they're saying, you know, it's a terrible shame because you do need an independent eye on our justice system. And now, lots of cases are going completely unreported and, you know, bad things do happen in court. And these are not being brought to the attention of the public where, you know, changes can be made and, you know, you can get sort of a petition or whatever to try and get what happened changed.
Well, a lot of the courts have been closed across the country, haven't they, due to austerity, which started with the Cameron government in 2010. Mm. I wonder, you know, has the Old Bailey suffered with that, and has British justice in a wider context, has that suffered?
Yeah, I mean, if you talk to the barristers, especially the criminal barristers, they are up in arms. Because of austerity, what's happened is the legal aid has been cut dramatically. And a lot of criminal barristers are claiming that they are actually earning as little as £5 an hour in certain instances. The reason for that is that the amount of evidence that comes into a case nowadays has grown dramatically, mainly because you've got CCTV, you've got mobile phone evidence, messaging, you've got, you know, where they can sort of pinpoint people where they were through triangulation of a mobile phone. And for the first time in the history of our justice system, the criminal barristers have actually gone on strike. They've been on strike 3 times, and there is uproar. The other problem is not just that, is that the buildings are falling apart. You know, because there's lack of money. I was talking to a barrister not so long ago, and he said, I think it was in a London Crown Court, which is sort of by the Elephant and Castle, and he was saying, you know, I try to get down to the cells to see my client, but, you know, they're completely flooded and I couldn't get down there. And, you know, there's horror stories of sort of raw sewage running, you know, on the ceilings and stuff. And there is real, you know, anger at how our criminal justice system has been sort of drained of money and neglect. And from the Rolls-Royce service that it used to be, you know, a lot of criminal barristers now are telling me, you know, standards are falling dramatically, and the only way to solve it is start, you know, paying, you know, and pumping money into the system, because, you know, it will fall apart. And because the criminal barristers are earning such little money, they're leaving the profession in droves. You know, you're talking about very able people, and they're going off to become legal executives in big business where they can earn 4 or 5 times as much as they can as a criminal barrister. And a lot of criminal barristers are almost doing it, you know, for love of the job nowadays, you know, and there is a real problem in our criminal justice system. And with COVID, and you're having this huge build-up of criminal cases, I mean, it's going to cause real problems in that justice won't be done, because you know, cases won't be heard for 3 or 4 years. And, you know, you're thinking of people's memories and witnesses being quizzed. I mean, you know, your memories fade, and, you know, it's, I don't know what they're going to do, because there is a big, big problem that was already there. But now with COVID on top, you know, it's going to cause, you know, our justice system to you know, fall apart almost. I'm really worried for the future. Yeah.
It might be a bit of a cheeky question, Tim, but as a journalist, I wonder what you make of the Assange hearing, because a lot of journalists around the world have been pointing the finger at Britain and saying, well, this is interesting, isn't it? This journalist has got information leaked to him, has published it, and is now standing trial as a spy. Well, I mean, you and I know that journalists, unless they're actually you know, physically part of the military or whatever, can't really be a spy. He's basically being put through this extradition hearing for being a publisher. What do you make of the trial? It's not actually a trial, it's a hearing, extradition hearing. What do you make of the way that that's gone, and the treatment of Assange? Because there's very much, most people are split one way or the other. Either they think that he's a, you know, a dangerous spy, a crook, a criminal who's been leaking secret information to the public, and others that he's, well, just been doing his job.
Well, I'm sure I'm like you. I think he's just been doing his job. What journalist wouldn't publish the information that he managed to get his hands on? I mean, it was a massive scoop. I think it's wrong that we've, you know, going to throw him to the Americans. And, you know, if he does get extradited back, I don't think he'll be treated fairly over there. You know, I think that, you know, the hearing should never have happened. And I think he should have been, you know, almost given asylum here, where he could sort of, you know, live his life away from, you know, the Americans who want to, you know, put him on trial and maybe lock him up forever.
I suppose if one of the tabloids wanted to give him the editorship of the newspaper, they might actually have an increase in sales just because of the name he's made for himself. But anyway, look, Tim, could you just tell us whereabouts people can find you online, and give us also an idea of when you might be resuming your tours?
Yeah. Well, I have a website which is www.old-bailey.com. I don't know if people are interested, but I publish a list of cases on every day at the Old Bailey, if people are interested in seeing, you know, what's going on in our most famous court. So you can get that if you just type into Google what's on at the Old Bailey. I also put on seminars with I mean, I've got one on December 3. I've got the former chief constable of Cambridgeshire. I've got a top criminal barrister and a former Oxford Don. The Oxford Don's going to sort of tell you how to spot if a suspect's lying. The chief constable's interesting because he believes that our drugs laws are an absolute farce, and he's all for having drugs legalized in this country because he says we're putting it all into the hands of the criminals, and people are always going to take drugs. So let's start, you know, having it like when you get it at a chemist. So I do that. And also, of course, I do the tours. And you can see all that on the website, which is, if you just type in Old Bailey Insight in Google, you'll get that up.
How do people get in touch, and what are you up to with your tours? And if people want to come along on a tour, Tim, how do people get contact you and find out what you're up to?
Well, I've got a website, which is www.old-bailey.com, or you can just type in Old Bailey Insight on Google, and that will get you to the website. Tours, obviously, are on hold at the moment. They won't really resume properly until, you know, social distancing rules are relaxed. But I have been doing a few. Obviously, I can only do 5 people at a time. But hopefully when, you know, if we get a cure in the summer, you know, they'll be able to run as normal. And tickets cost about £15 or £10 if you're a concession, a student, or an OAP. And the tour that most people go on is what's called the Old Bailey Combined Tour, which involves the Royal Courts of Justice, the Inns of Court, where barristers have their offices, and ends up at the Old Bailey. And then you're given a list of the most interesting cases on that day. And you can then, in the afternoon, go and watch a murder trial or whatever takes your fancy of your choice. I also run seminars. I have a crime and punishment. Well, it's online. It's a webinar where I get 3 speakers to give their insights into our justice system. There's one on December 3. I've got 3 great speakers. Former Chief Constable of Cambridgeshire, who believes drugs should be legalised. He gives a very interesting talk. A top criminal barrister who worked regularly at the Old Bailey, giving his insights into criminal justice, and an Oxford Don who's a body language expert who will be talking on how to spot if a suspect is lying and giving many examples of that, they're all very interesting people. And there's a Q&A after each one. So that's what I'm doing. I also arrange for people, if they want to have a barrister talk to them over Zoom, I can I sort that out. And I've got, you know, forensic officers, police officers who can give, you know, private talks to groups of students, or, you know, or just one or two people who are crime buffs if they want to do that. And that's all on the website, which is www.old-bailey.com. Or if you type in Old Bailey Insight, you'll go straight to it in Google.
Okay. Tim Wood from Old Bailey Tours, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Cheers, then.